You're doing all the right things, like eating clean and staying active, but nearly all of us are still missing a key piece, minerals. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's not getting, supporting mood, energy, immunity, and nervous system balance. It's made from ionic trace minerals your body actually absorbs and comes in three delicious flavors, blue raspberry, blue Hawaiian, and blue acai. Because your body can't make minerals and modern food and water don't supply enough, start with minerals. Start with Concentrace. Find it now at TraceMinerals.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Tim. We taped The Next Level earlier this afternoon before the news that Charlie Kirk was shot and killed at an event at Utah Valley University today. A lot more information will be coming out on that if you go to our YouTube feed or the Bulwark Takes feed. As we get more information, I will have expanded thoughts with likely Sarah and JVL, where we will get into that. Obviously, it is extremely tragic and distressing. This is not where we want to be as a country when it comes to this type of political violence. It doesn't serve any good. And I've had my disagreements with Charlie, but I feel just so bad for his family and his wife and his two little kids. And it's just brutal news. So if you want more on that, like I said, go over to Bulwark Takes or check out YouTube. And I'm sure I'll be discussing it on the Daily Pod tomorrow. What's up next is the Next Level podcast, which taped earlier today. So stick around for that.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of the Bulwark. Guys, it is Wednesday and things are happening. Just moments before we sat down, Donald Trump commented on the Article 4 action, which transpired last night, where a bunch of Russian drones invaded Polish airspace.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Is it?
I'm going to read it to you live.
Is it peace through strength? Is it Reagan? Is it tear down this wall? What could it be?
Or does he just make chirping noises with his armpit?
What's with Russia violating Poland's airspace with drones? Here we go.
Burping sounds with that's armpit. That's right.
Was that in a press avail or in what forum was that?
This is Truth Social.
Wait, hold on. Here we go. Can you read that again?
What's with Russia? I'm reading this as if I'm Jerry Seinfeld. I'm sorry.
Okay.
What's with Russia violating Poland's airspace with drones? Here we go. At which point, like, Kramer, like, throws the door open and comes in. Oh, hey.
Don't try to make Trump into Seinfeld. I don't want anything that might make Trump appealing to me in any manner. That doesn't feel like a tough alpha male response to me. And that's just me. I don't, maybe my awareness of what makes an alpha male these days or a sigma male is a little bit off. I don't know what MAGA people think, but so Russia attacked our NATO ally.
I mean, Russia sent a bunch of drones through Polish airspace. Maybe it was an oopsie. I don't want to say it was an attack.
They've landed a couple in Poland over the
again.
Past
could be an oopsie.
Too.
We're going to find
a couple
out.
Of it, oopsies.
I'll tell you who's not thinking it's an oopsie. Poland.
Yeah,
their experience with Russia violating their airspace, not
well,
great.
And they called the European actual NATO allies, not us, you know, and sent planes. I mean, it was a serious crisis. I say Donald Trump was at Joe's Stone Crab. Me and Sarah have had lunch a few times. Or Joe's Crab House, whatever it's called. Not exactly, you know, he's going
Stone Crab.
Joe's Seafood and Stone Crab. He's going there to demonstrate how the streets of DC are safe now, because that was a real high crime area outside of Joe's Stone Crab. It's where like 70-year-old lobbyist men go to have like lengthy lunches and martinis. So it was a very dangerous area before.
It is a high crime area. But all the crime is happening inside the restaurant.
To be fair, the protesters
it's white collar crime inside. What?
The protesters did find him there and yell at him.
That's right.
He did not like it. And he's like a scared old man backing away from them. If you look at the video,
No, there's a lot of college age girls suddenly in my face. What do I do?
So anyway,
it's not 1985.
Not anymore, buddy. It's so the Stone Crab, he's there at Stone Crab having a leisurely dinner while Russia sends the drones into NATO airspace. And then this morning, you're telling me 12 hours later, he writes,
What's
the deal?
What's the deal with Russia violent? Yes. Here We Go, which is going to be like Cafeve, or, you know, super cool and super very cool and very legal. It is like he's not president sometimes, right? Like he breaks the fourth wall and he's just America's top commenter. Like, oh, yeah. These things are happening. Oh. It's amazing.
Whatever happened to Joe Biden? The war in Ukraine never would have happened if it wasn't for him.
Yeah. Guys, what is happening right now, both in Israel and in Russia, these people do not think Donald Trump is a serious person. And his tweet or whatever demonstrates, obviously, why they don't take him seriously. But this notion that Trump is such a wild card, such a tough guy, that he was no new wars would start because no one knew which way he was going to go, how crazy he would be. These guys have been pressure testing him for a while. Bibi knows that he can go bomb Qatar and that Trump can be mad because that's so far what we've seen. President Trump is displeased. He said, I'm very angry about this. That's it. No follow up like a parent without any consequences. And with Russia.
Doesn't Bibi know they gave me a plane?
Yeah. Putin clearly knows Trump is just complete weak sauce, more on his side than on NATO's side. And so they feel like they can start, like people are starting to pop off, feeling like the United States is now on the sidelines and not a real player.
Your point on Israel is good. I just throw in there, and I don't want to feign expertise on the merits of all of these various attacks, but it is noteworthy in the context of Donald Trump acting as if he was going to be the peace president. The top cop is back in charge. People respect us again. They're going to do what he wants. You know, all these crazy wars that were happening with Joe Biden, and like all that happened because he was so feeble. And like, once I'm in there, that's going to stop. In the last 48 hours, Israel is engaged in military action in Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Qatar. Assassinations, like bombings inside, well, I guess not five other countries because Gaza, but four other countries in Gaza. I mean, like, it has expanded a lot. I don't know if that's really like seeped in with people. I don't know, because it isn't quite as dramatic as like the Iran bombing or whatever, but like Israel's actions throughout the region continue to expand, violent actions, and then now Russia is acting with impunity right now, moving in full, and does not worry at all. There's no concern. There was no concern in Moscow that was like, ooh, you know, we need to put out a statement about how this was an oopsie because maybe the Americans, you know, might retaliate against us, right? Like there was no worry about that. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's not, and Bill wrote about this really well in Morning Shots this morning, just about how, you know, this, there were some hawks out there, you know, for like a month ago that were like, you know, you guys just don't appreciate what Trump's doing here. Okay. Like 5D Trump's chess. Tougher. Yeah. Trump's tougher than you think. And he's got, and it's like, I mean, no, the most crazed lefty who like believes that Trump is Krasnov and that Putin owns him, like their projection about what would happen, you know, over the course of this first 9 months was much closer to accurate than Hugh Hewitt's or like Marco Rubio's for that matter, Secretary of State, right? Like Trump is just totally folded on this stuff.
And this was always, you know, again, I think when Tim says we don't want to feign expertise, I always try to be mindful of the fact that I'm not a foreign policy expert. That being said, I do think that we all sort of knew that going into a dangerous world, Donald Trump was one of the worst people to be in charge. Because if you know him like we do in America, and you know that it's all bluster, and none of it is steeped in any understanding of the world or love of people, like he wants a Nobel Peace Prize. He doesn't want peace. And as a result, you're going to get, like, he's going to say, no, we're going to pursue peace through strength. And instead, we're going to get war through weakness, because that's what he's projecting. That's what he's shown Putin. I'm at this point, JBL, I wanted to ask you, Bibi is starting to act like a person who needs the United States less than a United States Republican president needs Bibi. Like, I know we bring a lot in terms of money and arms, but like, I don't know. He doesn't feel like he's saying to himself, boy, we've got to be really careful about how we, like, he didn't give America a heads up. Like, we found out because we saw the planes. The American military saw the planes. Took a while to get confirmation from Israel. And then we end up talking to Qatar first. And like, yes, we've got a relationship with Qatar, like a strong diplomatic relationship. It's not like, I mean, you know, American presidents don't routinely go to Qatar to demonstrate anything the way that they do to Israel. So like, what is Bibi thinking right now?
So I have a theory on this, which is that Netanyahu has decided that he was going to tie himself to the Republican Party. And as a result, tie Israel to the Republican Party, which was going to shatter the sort of American bipartisan consensus on Israel, which has existed pretty durably for, you know, 60 years, 70 years. And he's done that, I think. Like, he's made Israel itself and certainly his administration like a partisan polarized issue, which is something Israeli governments had long tried to do. But what I don't think he understands really, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe this is unfair, maybe he does get it. I'm not sure he gets the existence of anti-Semitism on the right in America. Like, it seems to me that he really believes that like every anti-Semite in America is a, you know, free Palestine, college age protester, lefty type. And this sort of thing is not like there is a fairly sizable faction within Trump's coalition, which tolerates Israel at best. And this sort of stuff puts Trump in a harder spot than I think Bibi realizes. I think Bibi thinks that he's got Trump by the short hairs just as a political matter. You know, like he thinks, well, you know, Republican voters are they are super duper rabid about Israel. And so Trump has to stick with me no matter what. I'm not sure that that will always be the case.
Yeah, you're right on the Trump part. And he does believe that he has it. He's probably right, because it's just like, well, we'll just do the, you know, the Trump Tower Gaza Riviera right. Will be so beautiful, right? You know, and like, he knows how to play Trump. Trump's not that hard to play. So I think that part is right. I mean, he has to be aware of the anti-Semitism issue on the right. He went on the Nelk Boys, which are this like the Canadian Manosphere podcast bros. And that turned into like a massive controversy after he was on that. And like the guys had to like apologize and try to be like, we're learning, we're trying to do better. And it was like these two 24-year-old Canadians in their dad's suits, you know, whatever, that usually do podcasts about like farts and stuff. And so like, anyway, he went on that show and there's a huge backlash. So like, he had to be aware of that. So I don't know. Maybe
the backlash was because they had Trump on.
No, because they had Bibi on.
Oh, they'd be beyond.
Yeah,
oh,
there's a lot of people in that kind of like MAGA right manosphere, whatever world, that were like, whoa, like, what are you guys doing? Because that wasn't it was a typical Joe Rogan style interview. You know, it was like, hey, Bibi, what's happening there? And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, all the questions were not, they didn't really challenge him on anything. They were just,
Bibi thinks that J.D. Vance is on his side all the way. Because that
probably
strikes me as a miscalculation.
Actually, well, you could be right. I mean, here's the thing. When you say, so I don't think that Trump thinks at all about who hates whom very much. He only cares about who likes him, right? So he is nice to people who like him. So as far as and he has these like his, you know, he has his biases, his bigotedness always manifests in these like funny, not funny, but like, they're like silly cultural ways. Like he just has, you know, he thinks Jews are good at math and money and, you know, black people are good at sports. And he just has these very cartoonish views of people. But I don't think that I think other than immigrants, where he understands like, oh, I can wield this hatred. I think Donald Trump. Yeah. Anyway, he has to be aware of the anti-Semitism on the right, though, because Candace Owens, who he's had to the White House, Tucker Carlson, like this isn't a fringe. I mean, these people are fringy, but they are super mainstream and like Republican. They speak at the convention or they are invited to speak at CPAC or Turning Point USA. Like these are people who are integrated into the coalition. Nick Fuentes got invited to Mar-a-Lago.
Right.
I mean, he loves, as long as they like him. You know, if it's Diddy abusing women, if it's Kanye being like a black Hitler. They're like all invited in the coalition.
What I think Bibi probably misunderstands here is that I think he views like that schism that exists within MAGA on the subject of Israel and the Jews as being like two sides, both of whom are totally committed. I don't think that's true, really. I think if push comes to shove, Candace Owens is going to stay where she is. The Israel hawks within that movement, I think those commitments are much lighter than the Netanyahu government may believe it to be. And
yes,
and the commitments are on the parts of the, you know, the I don't want to say anti-Semitic, but the people who are Israel skeptics on that side, those things are done in cement.
Yeah. And this is why he's in such a, so again, when I said at the beginning that I could almost speak outside my expertise, I guess my point is like, I don't know if it was necessary to attack Yemen or to do a strike inside Yemen today. I don't know. I haven't seen the intelligence or the strike inside Syria or like the, you know, like that's what I'm talking about. The US politics side of this, we can talk about. And I just think that like the, like right now as it stands with the way that Bibi has played this, assuming we have an ex-president and it's not Barron, you know, I think it's more likely than not, whether it's either party, that they're hostile to Israel.
Hostile to Israel. Yeah. No, I think it's an enormous strategic miscalculation.
Yeah,
by
I think that he tried to create a partisan wedge, wedged out the Democrats, and then he's going to lose the Republicans from within.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's 100%, but that I think that is the most likely outcome right now based on their action.
Well, in part too, because the part of what's happening is I think public opinion is really shifting on Israel and Gaza. Like it is now, I think, what was it? There was a YouGov survey that found a plurality of the electorate believes that Israel's continued attacks on Gaza are unjustified. So only 27% are supportive of Netanyahu and 84% favor an immediate ceasefire. And 7 out of 10 believe there's a huge crisis in Gaza. So like this is, the politics are getting away from him and Americans are like, and Trump, you said you were going to come in and solve this. You said you were going to come in and take care of this. And instead, it is all getting worse. And I think I'm just going to put in a quick plug for my guy Shapiro. Can't stop, won't stop. He said on August 5th, it's awful what's happening in Gaza, and we all have a responsibility to be there for those children. I thought it was also quite abhorrent what Prime Minister Netanyahu said roughly a week or so ago when he said there is no starvation in Gaza. He is wrong. So we can all be unified in our desire to see the hostages come home and also want these children to be fed. Those feelings are not mutually exclusive. So my hope is these hostages come home immediately, that the war ends, these children in Gaza are fed. And I think the United States of America has a moral obligation to see to it that they get to. And I think like that's the median position of voters right now.
Maybe. Yeah. All right. Well, there's our foreign policy. You know, nothing gets people going like foreign policy. On this podcast,
it is pretty noteworthy. You know, how about this? We can give some resistance porn to close the foreign policy section. I think it's funny. Trump comes in and he's like, "Oh, we're going to stop the wars on the peace president." We put in Steve Witkoff, the outer borough real estate magnate, in charge of stopping both of the wars that people have heard of. You know, and those are both escalating, frankly, now out of Trump's control. And yet, Trump's talking point for for his very, very brilliant and well-read supporters is, well, I've brought peace deals to like 5 wars. And it's like, what ones is he talking about? And it's like Azerbaijan, Armenia, you know, and Egypt, Ethiopia, and Egypt. And most of these are bullshit, which Mark Hertling detailed very, very well last week on the podcast. But it's like, if you think that you're going to sell people on the fact that like that the world is calming down because the, you know, hostilities have abated periodically in Azerbaijan while the Middle East is on fire and Russia expands its incursion. I don't know if that's going to work for Donnie and Steve W, but we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Steve W's got a final deal up his sleeve.
It is amazing to me the way that Netanyahu manipulated Trump. So he basically drags Trump into the Iran bombing. Trump does it. Like, you know, it's not clear that he wants to. There's a lot of internal debate, but Bibi kind of forces his hand. Trump then does the great, some are saying this is the greatest partnership that has ever been held, right? You know, two nations walking hand in hand, blah, blah, blah. And as soon as he's gotten what he wanted out of, you know, oh, great, we got the J-Dams, we got the Bunker Busters out of you. Great, next. We're going to keep going without you. Yeah, right. And America gets totally cut out of the loop. And Israel's just like running its own foreign policy. And it's great. Heck of a partnership. Okay.
Quite the world power we've got here.
Quite the world power. Sarah, would you like to give us a word from our first sponsor? The good people at Naked Wines.
Who wants to get naked? Have you ever had a really nice bottle of wine on vacation? Something that was exciting and a bit different from your standard stuff? That's kind of what Naked Wine is like. This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked is a wine club that directly connects you to the world's best independent winemakers so you can get the world-class wine delivered straight to your door. Use our code THENEXTLEVEL for the code and password at nakedwines.com and get six bottles for just $39.99. Should last you a whole weekend. As you can see, sometimes I pour a bit of wine while we're recording the podcast, which I can't, producer, I can't pour this and read at the same time, but I can show it to you. How do they do it? Naked Wine brings you amazing wine straight from the winery at up to 60% less than what you would pay in store. By cutting out extra costs like middlemen markups, winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on quality. Naked Wines has been around for over 15 years and backs over 90 independent winemakers around the world to make the wine you love to drink. I've been rating the wine after I get it, and each shipment gets better and better suited to my tastes, and my wife and I can mix and match whatever varieties of wines we like. I tend to be a red person. She likes more whites. Now is the time to join the Naked Wine community. Head to nakedwines.com/thenextlevel, click enter voucher, and put in my code, the next level, for both the code and the password for six bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. Oh, that's great. That's 100% off your first six bottles at nakedwine.com/thenextlevel and use the code and password, the next level, for six bottles of wine for $39.99. Thanks, Naked Wines.
Let's go to the birthday book, which is what we were going to start the show about, but then events took over. What I guess we should just start with our audio of our president explaining what we were really seeing yesterday.
Did you sign the FDIC birthday letter?
It's not my signature, and it's not the way I speak. And anybody that's covered me for a long time know that's not my language. It's nonsense. And frankly, you're wasting your time. All you do is trying to get off the great success of D.C. and about 200 other things we've done that are so successful. This is a great, great success, and we have so many. I don't think any president in their first 8 months has anywhere near the success that we've had.
It's not his signature. Didn't they float this with the Access Hollywood thing initially?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't the first reaction like, oh, that
wasn't
not
my voice.
That wasn't my voice.
That's not my voice.
And then it became like, well, I don't talk like that. That's just, you know, that's just locker room talk. So we're doing that. Sarah and I teased this a little bit yesterday, or not teased it, but like teased it out a little bit yesterday. I'm very curious to hear if she has changed her mind and where you are on this, Tim. Is this a defensible position? Like, can he dig in here and make this work?
Yeah, the question is can he just muscle through on the, that's not my signature? I will just say, on the Access Hollywood thing, what was funny is at the time he said, it doesn't sound like me. Like, people who were in the room, he genuinely thought, that doesn't sound like me. I have no doubt, perhaps he thinks it genuinely doesn't sound like him, the big words and things used in that card.
Enigma.
Enigma.
Sound like a Trump word.
So honestly, that was a little bit my first reaction to it, too. It's like, this sounds too erudite for the president. But it's possible that he just forgets what he sounded like 30 years ago.
His vocabulary has shrunk over the course of the last few decades.
Because he's 80 years old. So, yes. Oh, but to the question of, do I think he's going to try to, that's their line and they're sticking to it. I think, yes. And I think the reason is, he thinks that he can dodge with, and we're going to see them in court. And he thinks, much like, I will release my taxes when I'm done with the, you know, like, he has this stalling capability that he does. And I think by kicking it to, you know, well, we're suing them, that's how we're going to do it, he will do nothing to move that case forward while he's president of the United States, because I'm sure he knows that that is his signature. It is obviously his signature. And he is counting on the stupidity of many of his voters and the cynicism of many of his supporters.
So here's the question about whether it should work. At some level, like polarizing this is his best play, right? Just being like,
right,
this is the fake news media. It's a hoax. It's the Democrats. They don't actually even care about this. There was that white lady that got murdered on the subway the other day. The Democrats don't care about that. They care about this. They're terrible, right? Like, that's like the best thing for him to do. I'm great. They're terrible. They're lying. They're fake news. It's a hoax. It's fake. And hopes that that provides enough cover for the people who do care, like that if the MAGA voters, if the MAGA base in mass decides that this is just a way to get their president, then they'll gladly stop caring about the pedophile stuff that they either did care or pretended to care about in the past with QAnon, and they'll move on to their top issue. And that maybe that's his best play, right? Like, it's just polarizing this. The questions, though, are about the weakness of the play. Is does it work with the softer voters? Right? Like, does he start to get mocked in the comedy space? I'm not talking about like the late night liberal comics, but like the MAGA comedy space. Like, I think that's something to watch this week. Like, do those guys start to be like, oh, really? It's not your signature. It just looks exactly like you. Like, oh, really? You don't love young women? Like, if that was your whole fucking brand for your whole life, like talking about how much you love young women, right? Like it's a preposterous defense. And does that lead to mocking? And is that something that might unravel kind of that portion of his support? I think maybe. And the other thing is, like, and so you and Sarah talked about this, and people should really just listen to the Full Secret podcast on this. But like the strategy reveals that he thinks there's more there or knows there's more there. You know what I mean? And like, that's the other reason why, yes, like, it kind of doesn't work. Like, it might work if this was it. I'd say, yeah, maybe that works. Right. But like, it's obviously not it. Right. Like, I mean, as before, 36 hours ago, we didn't know about the big check about the depreciated female asset that we don't know if Trump actually gave it to Epstein or if it was a gag, but they that kind of relationship where he was like, you know, there's a gag gift to, you know, ESPN, you know, college football, you make
the field goal, that was also a forgery. The big check signature, also a forgery, I'm sure, Tim. Yeah. We haven't gotten to that yet, but I'm sure he will tell us that check, also a forgery.
So that was something we learned. My point is that there's more like
did
that.
Did she?
That's all I'm saying. Yeah, go ahead.
You're kidding, Sarah.
Yeah, Carolyn Leavitt's. No, yesterday I did this whole thing with Edgar. I watched that whole press conference because I thought the American press corps is going to ask about Epstein. They must ask these things. Unfortunately, the Cutter thing had just happened.
Maggie asked.
Hold on. Yes, she's the only one who got in a clean question on this, because the first person who asked the question, she said, hoax, 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 nothing to see here. And then Maggie did later, she picked it up and said, what's the hoax? Are you saying that the Epstein documents from his estate are fakes? And that was the only time Carolyn Leavitt got flustered the whole press conference, which to say, no, I'm saying the whole conversation is a hoax. Democrats don't care about this. And so this is the question. The question is, are people stupid enough, or enough people, not because obviously there are some, but are people either stupid enough or polarized enough to let this go? Yeah,
I know JBL, the answer to this one. You're asking the question, and I know the answer. Call on me, teacher. Call on me.
I don't know why I just walked myself into that. I think.
I was feeling better about it till you framed it that way, Sarah. Now that was the question: is are the people stupid enough to accept this?
Well, here's the one thing. I think that all signs point to he is freaked out about what else could be out there and what else could come out. And the American, I couldn't tell you how lame the American media was, the exception of Maggie Haberman, in this press conference. It is also stacked with pro-Trump toadies who start their questions with, it's just so great to walk the safe streets of Washington, D.C. now that you've made them safer for us, Mr. President. Like, it is a straight up North Korean exercise in there. I actually was losing my mind. You should go watch the thing with me and Edgar after it was insane, these questions. There are real media people left in this country. Please pull on these threads. You go through that book. My team went through the entire book. Call all the people in it. Donald Trump isn't just in the letter. He's all over this book. His name's all over the book. The victims who are included in the book, like very darkly, scarily, all say like they met Donald Trump, like his number and like whatever the list that's at the beginning, like it's all, he's all over the place.
Can I just do a quick rant of the media? The media fucking, like, it is so bad. It doesn't even get mentioned because nobody watches it. This, it is North Korea. It is so bad the way that the, that they've stacked this with MAGA reporters asking these questions. And like, there is, it almost feels stupid to say, but like, there was a whole cottage industry of conservative media criticism our whole lives. It's like the mainstream media is biased. And there were some points, there were times in which the mainstream media was biased, but like, you never had this. Like during the Obama administration, it's not like you had in the front row, you know, the AP reporter raising their hand saying, sir, you know, you've really, Obamacare, I'm on Obamacare now, and it's really so much better for me personally. And I really appreciate the work. You know what I mean? Like, it is crazy how just lick spittle they all are.
It's almost and it just doesn't even get, media, it's just honesty.
Yeah, maybe they don't care about media honesty. That's a good point. Sorry, JB, what was your question?
So here's my question, because I do think that this is a case where Trump does have one card on the table face down. And that is, what if he knows that Ghislaine Maxwell
Your accents are really on point today.
I'm, you know, I'm everywhere. Studied at the Royal Shakespeare Academy.
Governor Pepe Le Pew.
What if he knows that she's going to say, oh yeah, I did that?
That's not a card. Sorry. That's That's a two card. That's a two card underneath the table. Okay. Is that any better than his current, his current argument? His current argument of it's not me is.
Well, she could just say, like, yeah, having, it isn't him. I did.
But who cares what she says?
She's I put it together for him because
She's in a prison for running a grooming ring of young women that she like essentially brought into sex slavery. So I don't know that her it testimony
seems like this is a signal to her that if she wants to get upgraded again to a better club fed, that there are ways she can help
I just
him.
Don't think, I mean, maybe he thinks that helps him, but I don't. I think Trump saying this is not me, as preposterous as that is better for his supporters than having his supporters having to be like, well, did you listen to what the child rape lady had to say about Trump? You know what I mean? It's better. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think that's right. Okay. And I just don't think that helps him any. I think that the card, he has got cards, but I don't like his card, the card that he has that he has a cult. That's the card that he has.
So
he
can what about the FBI informant line? That Mike Johnson trotted out.
He had to walk that back. He walked that back.
And in like a way that he realized he'd made a big oopsie. Because an informant's a pretty specific thing. You make a claim like that, that is based entirely.
Trump isn't a rat.
No, he had to come back and say it wasn't true. That he just meant, broadly speaking, it's just common knowledge that Donald Trump would have been helpful to the police if they'd asked him to. Like, he just...
This is the point. Like, Trump has no argument on the merits. It doesn't matter what people say. It, like, truly doesn't matter. There's no point in analyzing it because it's like, the whole point is a humiliation ritual and a cult development exercise where it's like, you guys are going to say whatever ridiculous shit I say about this, and that you're going to do it because you don't want the libs to win. And you want me to win, and you don't want to give the other side any quarter. And so I'm going to say whatever I want. It is definitely from a place of weakness. Like, it'd be better if he had a compelling argument, right? Like, I think they would rather use a compelling argument, but they don't have one, clearly. And so they're going to do what they've done several other times with Trump before, like the fact that he didn't lose the election, and just gut it out and assume that the cult stays with him. And I think it's not too bad of a bet, really.
Well, if it's a stupid conversation, Tim, I'm sorry for wasting 12 minutes of our lives on it.
Did I say it was stupid?
Yes. You said it's stupid to even talk about what people are saying.
I mean, it kind of is, right? I mean, okay. Like, the strategic arguments about his fucking spin on this, I mean, it's like, that is preposterous.
I'm here
the thing
to
is preposterous.
Accept constructive criticism. That's fine with me.
I feel like you're like taking it as a personal attack.
No, I never meant that as such.
Hey guys, can I just
personally.
Say, yeah, go ahead. Here's this Epstein stuff and just why I continue to make a case that it's important is that I think he did something pretty bad at some point and he knows it. Like, he seems really, there's a lot of stuff in his past. I'm not saying he was like a participant in the island and the sex ring, but like that he's done a lot of, he was clearly culturally enmeshed in a world in which they were all abusing, or by abusing, they were all having, it's not clear, that he was abusing underage girls, but like, there's no reason there is nothing in his, well, like when Donald Trump tells this lie, you have to be like, ah, yes, you lied when you said you were going to release the Epstein files. You lied standing next to Pam Bondi saying that your name wasn't in the Epstein files. You lied saying you had nothing to do with the letter. You've lied about everything in your life. You've sexually assaulted people all your life. So what is it about your life, your character, that makes us go, ah, yes, I'm sure he's telling the truth, that 22 years ago, somebody forged his signature and put it in this book. And then all the rest and all, he's in all the other places in this book because it is a plant and a hoax. Like, it defies all credulity. And I think that, I know we like to, and by we, I mean, JBL likes to postulate that this guy's going to run again in, you know, 2028 when he's 82 years old. I think this is the chance. Like, I think this is the thing. He gets away with Access Hollywood. He gets away. I mean, he gets away with E. Jean Carroll. Like, I mean, not exactly with E. Jean Carroll, because at least he was held civilly liable. But like, he's gotten away with so much. I don't know. I still think people should try to push on this. I think you can't have another election with him. Something, if like, this is to me one of the last best hopes for how you actually take him down, so to speak. That and crashing the economy.
Here. I don't agree with that, by the way, but I'm fully in support of you in that effort. And I think that trying is important. And I guess that's all that I have to say about that. I wish it was true, but I don't expect it will be.
Tim, would you care to give us our second sponsor?
Summer is over, which means skincare is more important than ever, especially for straight people like JVL, straight men who are not taking care of their
dagger
face, who haven't been moisturizing. Okay, it's important to moisturize, all right? This is critical, and I'm the top advocate for straight male face moisturizing in the whole country, and I'm hoping that the women at OneSkin, the women that founded OneSkin, can be your entry point into making sure that you look fresh and not creepy. Notice, known for their cult favorites like OS Woman Body.
Not creepy, crepy.
Creepy.
Creepy.
And I'm not sure that's better.
It would be better.
JVL, I think
you're
beautiful.
I'm not saying you look creepy, JVL. I'm saying I don't want you to start looking creepy.
HR is going to hear from me.
And a good way to avoid becoming creepy before your time, OS One Body, OS One Face, and OS One Eye, which OneSkin stands out for their science-first approach. They deliver hydration, barrier support, and powerful longevity benefits in a single step. At the core is their patented OS One peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells. I love saying the word senescent. The root cause of wrinkles, creepiness, as mentioned, and loss of elasticity. It's going to stop the creepiness. So do OneSkin. OneSkin's the world's first skin longevity company, targeting cellular aging to keep your skin and scalp looking and acting younger for longer. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin with 15% off using code thenextlevel at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code thenextlevel. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them JVL sent you. Try OneSkin today. Your future self will thank you.
Strong. I have never once in my life moisturized.
Yeah.
Not once.
I know.
And never now I feel very self-conscious about it.
Never too late to start.
Maybe OneSkin should send me some stuff. Send me some product, OneSkin.
I agree with that.
All right.
What else are we going to talk about?
So I have a triad coming out hot in about 30 minutes.
Oh, yay.
Assuming we ever finish this show. And it is titled...
Is it about people suffering the consequences of their actions?
Adventures in Stove Touching.
Oh, we're not even going to do the jobs numbers. I did a whole transition. I talked about Donald Trump crashing the economy, thinking I was going to give you a perfect transition.
It is, in fact, about the job revisions, down 991,000 jobs through March.
Mostly from 2024.
Not good. And this fantastically interesting piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer over the past weekend about Hazleton, Pennsylvania, which is basically where you grew up, Sarah.
No. It is not far from where I grew up.
Oh, really?
But it's, I mean, Pennsylvania's a very big state.
It's your neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was kind of far.
It's violence. Far, it's close, it's far relative to, like, wasn't my neighboring place, but it's close as in it's closer to me than I am right now.
Did you ever play any
home.
Field hockey tournaments there or softball?
No.
Axe wielding competition?
No. Wow. So I don't know if we want to do the whole thing, but the thumbnail version of this piece is that Hazleton is a heavily Hispanic majority city. 67% of the town is Hispanic. It also went plus 28 for Donald Trump. And the piece is a couple reporters from the Inquirer going to Hazleton to talk to people to see what they think about their support of Donald Trump. And basically every Trump voter they talk with is like, yeah, no, I'm sticking with him. And their reasons are interesting. So first of all, Hazleton seems to be suffering some real deportation problems. The streets empty like a ghost town. One of the people interviewed says that the town kind of looks like it did during COVID. There's just nobody out and around because a lot of people just don't want to be in public, don't want to go outside. And you have essentially four types of answers. You have one older retired gentleman who's like, yeah, that's right. This is good. This is what I want. This is Trump. This is Trump doing what we sent him to do. And he's perfectly fine with his town looking like a ghost town. You then have a woman who says, no, everything is fine. I think all of this ICE stuff is just overblown on social media. And, I've heard from people that things are smoother than ever in immigration, which is like, oh, interesting. Okay. Then you have a gentleman who owns a barbershop, which is empty, who says that, it seems to have really hurt his business. And a lot of Hispanic folks are just staying indoors and staying out of public life because they're afraid of getting rousted up and arrested by people in masks and deported. But he's confident that Trump is only actually going after real criminals, and he's looking forward to all of the good effects of Trumpism coming in the next year. And then you have a lady who says, yeah, this is all really bad. And it's, you know, like if people are afraid to leave their homes and it's awful. And I don't blame President Trump. It's just that there is these extremists surrounding him and these overzealous ICE officers. And like, if only he knew. Anyway, I just wanted to open this up for conversation. Tim, why don't you go first, buddy?
Sometimes I'm glad that we covered up the window in my second floor studio, to create better lighting for me, because occasionally I just want to just jump out it, do a little swan dive. I do go back to the David Frum thing that he's been so good on for however many years we've been in this nightmare, 8 years now. He kind of always compared Trump to being like a con man, that if you have a friend that gets caught up by one of these, property deals, and they put some investment in and it turns out to be a fake and they lose their shirt, and you go and, try to warn them that they're being conned, they get mad at you instead of the person conning them. Like, there's that, like, that is just human nature, right? Like, it's human nature to not want to say, this was a miss by me. Luckily not for me. I have many, many personal weaknesses. I love saying that I'm wrong. It's fine with me, but most people really dislike that. That goes against a lot of people's just core human nature and experience. It's very hard to get people to say that they were wrong. But like, I get depressed when I hear these stories, because my case out, Sarah offered her Epstein case out earlier, which I would love to be wrong about that and for her to be right. My case out was always like the economy, like, right? Like, the economy really gets bad, then enough people will be like, okay, fuck this. All right. Like, I care too much about my own self-interest to let whatever my feelings about the last election. I'm just going to pretend like that's, you know, I'm just going to move on and just not make this such a part of my identity. And that obviously that won't be 100% of the country, but that, you know, you get to a high enough number of the country that feels that way, we can move on from this and go back to real world. But like, if it didn't happen during COVID, and it's not happening in a town where there's like a micro version of this, right? Where like the town economy is really struggling, like as a result of the ICE raids, and you're seeing maybe what might be coming to the rest of the country in micro here, and you go there and people are still like, well, Mr. Trump's doing his best. You start to really grasp for other paths out, you know, and that's the part that gets me to want to start smoking a cigarette. So there you go. That's my reaction.
Sarah. I have a different reaction.
Oh, great. I know it.
Yeah. So one is just as a quick matter. It seemed to me when I started reading the piece, the fact that they couldn't find a lot of people meant that the people they ended up talking to were the ones who were not hiding. And so perhaps if you talk to the people who were hiding, you might get a different answer.
All
than
right,
the ones
Sarah.
Who did.
Okay. Now we're talking.
The Hopium Chronicles brought to you all by right. Sarah
it's
Longwell.
It's not about Hopium. I'm it's just making Hopium. A logical observation okay. about selection bias.
All right,
okay.
Great. Yeah.
Because
okay.
if you're sorting people, as I do for qualitative stuff all the time, and you sort and you say, give me the people who currently aren't afraid of Trump, the Hispanics who currently aren't afraid of Trump, and versus the ones who currently are, probably get two different answers or from those two different groups of people, right? They sound very different. My second point on this, okay, so besides selection bias, is Hispanic support for Donald Trump is actually cratering. I understand they found these people to talk to in Hazleton, but nobody, young people and Hispanics are the ones who came late to Trump and are abandoning him first. I think the latest YouGov poll, it took me that I had seen, but this is all over the data. It was Reuters. Trump's support among Hispanic voters is at just 32%, the weakest level recorded since he returned to the White House. The decline is mirrored in the latest YouGov Economist poll, which shows Hispanic respondents breaking 28% approve and 68% disapprove. So I also think like then I'm going to bring you my third piece of what I think is has always been good news for Trump, but very bad news for Republicans. And it is in the words that last woman said, which is, it's not Trump himself. It's the rest of these people around him, which it's how I felt listening to Kevin McCarthy brag about Donald Trump's Saddam Hussein like numbers in all of these places. Just these Republicans speak in awe of him and his turnout machine. And I'm like, yeah, Kevin McCarthy, and you don't have a job anymore because they hate you. They like him. But Donald Trump has spent his last 10 years shitting all over the Republican Party. They don't like you. Trump was a celebrity. Trump has a gold toilet. Trump did a bunch of things that have endeared people to him. But we don't understand it. We find him repellent. And maybe it's because they think he likes them and supports them. And is really who he hates are these trans people that they don't like, whatever it is. I do think Donald Trump is unique in that regard and that this does not redound to the long term benefits of the Republican Party.
That was nice. That was the buck up I needed. And those are both accurate points. The thing that I still am felt leaving a little hollow about and still desiring a cigarette over is like, and I know this is just more about me than about anything, but whatever. It's our podcast. It's our channel. So you have to get to listen to my feelings. I want them to be fucking mad. I want people to be mad. I don't want his Hispanic approval number to be dipping down from this to that. Like, I want a reporter to go to Hazleton and to be like, I'm at the barbershop and the people in the barbershop are fucking pissed. Did I break the internet when I slammed it down?
What happened there was Tim was so mad that his hate fire actually knocked out his internet. Tim is back with us on his phone now. But before we move on, this show is sponsored by the Wild Alaskan Company. It's a constant battle for all of us to find the highest quality food we can get. But for seafood, I look no further than Wild Alaskan Company. I'm a tough customer when it comes to seafood, but let me tell you, the coho salmon and Pacific cod from Wild Alaskan tasted like I was in a remote cabin in Saskatchewan, not in my brownstone in Manhattan. Wild Alaskan is 100% wild caught and never farmed. This means there are no antibiotics, GMOs, or additives, just clean, real fish that support healthy oceans and fishing communities. Wild Alaskan fish is frozen off the boat to lock in taste, texture, and nutrients like omega-3s. Wild caught from Alaska, every order supports sustainable harvesting practices, and your membership delivers flexible shipments, expert tips, and truly feel-good seafood. If you're not completely satisfied with your first box, but you will be because it's amazing. But if you're not, Wild Alaskan Company will give you a full refund, no questions asked, no risk, just high quality seafood. Not all fish are the same. Get seafood you can trust. Go to wildalaskan.com/next level for $35 off your first box of premium wild caught seafood. That's wildalaskan.com/next level. For $35 off your first order, thanks to Wild Alaskan Company for sponsoring this episode. That's how you do a professional read there, kids.
Yeah, I made some pollock fish tacos last week from Wild Alaskan. Woo! Positive reviews. Folks were happy. Amazing.
All right, so we got to talk a little bit about some big news from Kamala Harris's book. I got many, many people who were very unhappy with me a couple months ago when I said that I didn't want to hear a self-justifying campaign book from Kamala Harris. All respect to her, and that I thought she did actually an excellent job. I'm sad she's not president. I thought she waged a great campaign and helped hold on to a bunch of seats that would have been lost had Joe Biden been running. But we now have our first excerpt in The Atlantic, and I'll just read the money quote. It's Joe and Jill's decision. We all said that like a mantra, as if we'd all been hypnotized. Was it grace or was it recklessness? In retrospect, I think it was recklessness. The stakes were simply too high. This wasn't a choice that should have been left to an individual's ego, an individual's ambition. It should have been more than a personal decision. Yowza.
Hardcore Team Kamala. Hardcore, she's right. I read the whole excerpt. I don't want to, I'm going to use this word. I'm going to use it advisedly. So everybody chill out. Like, it's a little, like she's complaining. She is complaining about her treatment as vice president. Yes. And
there's a lot of that in it.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds complaining. On the other hand, I read the whole thing and I was like, show me the lie. Like the idea that they both set her up for failure, did not defend her when people were coming after her, that they hung her out to dry in all kinds of ways. And so like, actually, I don't know. After reading the excerpt, I'm sort of more in favor of her at least getting to, because I learned even just in this excerpt. Now, I don't necessarily think I think this is exactly the right way that they were going to go about things policy wise, but it sounds like she wasn't the border czar. Like she was trying to figure out how to go to Mexico and boost their industry there so that people had
and
money.
Guatemala and
jobs,
El Salvador.
Yeah. And got, yeah, like she was working on economic and I don't know, this makes some sense. But like, that is a totally untold story. And she's like, why weren't they talking about these? Why weren't they talking about her successes? And I think the answer very clearly is and will be elsewhere in the book. She says this, if she shined, they assumed it dimmed him. And so like the level of ego that it took, I mean, all it does is re-enrage me about like this. And you know, but it does enrage me about everybody else who was present too. Because this idea of it's up to Joe and Jill is an abdication of responsibility of the other people who were around him. But she's right that she was the worst person to make that argument, right? Because it looks self-serving if you're her. Anyway, that was my first impulse.
I mean, as Sarah said, show me the lie. Everything in there is exactly right. I think there's something that we were saying last year, I was saying before that, for that matter. I just, Joe Biden's treatment of her from the beginning was unconscionable. It was maybe a bad choice also, by the way, by her, not necessarily because of anything about Kamala, but like another thing she mentions in this excerpt is the fact that she was especially sensitive about anything that might feel like a criticism or a distancing from him because of their backstory, how he had she had attacked him personally during the 2019 debate, and how like there was sensitivities around that, and how Jill was sensitive. And that's all fine. That'll make sense on a human level. But it's like, guys, everybody's going to put on their big boy pants and big girl pants. And it's like, you're the president and vice president of the United States. And you need to be able to give the president your best advice and your best counsel. And the president needs to be able to give you the room to help him and be successful. Right. And if he picked her because he like felt like he got cornered by saying he's going to pick a black woman, or I never really got a good rationale for why he picked her. Actually, part of it is Joe Biden didn't give really long form interviews ever. And where he talked about these sorts of things. So maybe there's another reason, but if you cannot pick somebody to be your vice president and then resent them, or be concerned that they're going to come for you, right? Like, I don't, you know, maybe you could imagine a situation where you might want to do that. You're like, you know, back in the 60s, civil rights era, you had to, you know, a Democrat had to pick a segregationist to balance out the ticket or whatever. Like, sure, there may be some reason to do it, but this wasn't one. Joe Biden could have picked anybody and he would have won. It wasn't like Kamala Harris was a critical key cog in him winning in 2020. I don't think anybody would say that. So you would think that he would pick her then as a governing partner or as a pass the torch type person, at which point he needs to set her up as a governing partner and a pass the torch type person. And he didn't do that. He did the opposite. He saddled her with shitty work. They didn't do anything to buck her up or buff up her profile, and his treatment then, and then obviously his behavior in 2024 was reckless, egotistical, and there's just no other way around it. And so I don't think that there's any reason to object to any of it. It's exactly right. His behavior was just frankly appalling when it regards to her, and then regarding the choice to run again in 2024. And my only nitpick of it, some people's critique will be like, why are you doing this now? I don't. There's not another election till next November. I just feel like it's as good a time as any to go out there and do this. I think that it's kind of silly to be like, oh, well, this news cycle will distract from Trump's thing. And it would be better, I guess, if we were just talking about Trump being terrible the whole time. But I don't begrudge her doing this right now, frankly. But my nitpick is like, I don't know. The stakes were really high once she took over. And she had a really tough job. I get it. She was thrown into a tough spot. She only had 107 days. It's right there in the name of the book. But like, if you felt like in order to win, you needed to distance yourself from Biden more, or you needed to distance yourself from him on Israel-Gaza, or you needed to distance yourself from his policy on the border, like you needed to do it in September of 2024, not September of 2025, right? Like, and that's like my critique. Like, I get it. I understand why you're sensitive. And I think he put her in a bad place, but also you're running for president of the damn United States. And like, and I think that frankly, especially given Biden's capabilities, from a communication standpoint, I think that she could have done the same thing back to him that he did to her, right? Like, he put her in a box a lot of times. And I think that she could have done the same thing just by going out and doing interviews and being like, Joe Biden is wrong about this. Like, what is Joe Biden going to do? Go out and do an interview and say, I am pissed at Kamala or whatever. I don't think so. I think he would have grumbled privately. And so anyway, like, that's my nitpick. Yeah.
Because they were not treating her well publicly. Like, right. This is where, look, she is complaining about her treatment, but I think her complaints are valid
for sure
throughout this thing. And I, your point about, you know, it's the problem with books is you're always like learning things. We're like, well, what, but if you knew this, why didn't you behave differently? The stakes were so high. And like, you beg people to sort of have realized this in the moment. But I just think like, when it comes to blaming people for 2024, she gets the least amount of mine. Like, I think that.
Same. Oh, I agree with that completely.
Like, it's like not even close. Like, I don't think she should run for president again in 2028. I'm not sure that's, I'll be interested to see if that is kind of how this book is positioned. But to me, actually, it just feels like, no, I get to have my say about how this went. And especially because Joe Biden has been out there. I just don't begrudge her when Joe Biden's gone out there being like, if it was me, I would have won. Like, just the most insane, insane takes possible. And yeah, anyway.
No, I am Joe Biden super fan number one, right? I think. Fair to say, yes.
If you still want to keep that title, I don't think there's a ton of competition out there for it. But
a lot of competition. No, I'm just saying that I come to this as somebody who thinks that he, on the merits, generally did an outstanding job as president on all the things that turned out not to matter. And that he was catastrophically wrong on, like, the single big issue, which is how do you stop Donald Trump from being president again? And when I read it was Joe and Jill's decision, that fills me with rage. Because there is a cult of the presidency which sees, like, the presidency as the president is the decider, right? And it's because he was elected, and I understand that. And that is true for normal times and normal issues. And ultimately, the final call has to be the president's because somebody... But the truth is, these things are institution-level decisions. And, like, who were the people at the table making the argument to Biden that he shouldn't run? Right? And, like, there should have been a very vociferous conversation around him, led by him, saying, so what do we think here, guys? Is this the right decision or not? And the fact that that does not seem to have happened is a scathing indictment of him. And it's fine in normal times for the president to just assume that he's going to run and to not want to hear dissenting voices on this. But this was not normal times. The polling was all very bad for him, right? I mean, it isn't like nobody knew. Yeah. That things were that, I mean,
Bill we were Kristol in danger. Was writing about it every day.
Yeah, you know, like the polling was grim, and the fact that he approached this as a, well, it's me and my wife making this decision for America, and I'm not even, like, asking other people to give me other inputs. That's bad. That's very, very bad. That is malpractice.
Yeah, and, like, can we just take a look for a second at the way Trump and J.D. Vance are? Like, just think about the difference in how much you see them, how much they're talking, how much J.D. Vance is out there building up his own brand, and Trump is supporting him. He's supporting Trump. He gets tons and tons of airtime, tons and tons of visibility. He just sits down with Lara Trump. Everybody pretends like it's a real interview between an actual interviewer and the vice president, as opposed to the president's daughter-in-law and his top stooge, but, like, and shitposter-in-chief, but whatever. Like, they didn't do any of that. None of it. Like, when I was banging on, and everybody's like, Sarah's so negative about Biden because I was constantly bitching about their communications thing. Like, you can just see it flex side by side. It's, like, not even close. They're not even in the same universes in terms of the way that they talk to people. Like, you want to know why Trump won? It's because people saw him all the time because he seemed better. Biden was hiding and they hid her. They should have used her to elevate him. She was better than him. And instead, his ego was so afraid of her outshining him that they wouldn't let her be out there. And I just...
So for what reason? You're the president of the United States. Like, what reason was he worried? But, like, what was... No. So who cares if she outshined you? You're the president. You got everything you ever wanted. You got your life's dream. Like, what? So what? You're worried that David Ignatius on Face the Nation is going to talk about how much more spry Kamala is? Like, what are you even worried? Like, the whole thing is just so shallow.
And I got to tell you, here, I'm just going to say one last thing. It's not the problem with Biden and his age wasn't just Biden's age. It was that he had a bunch of very long time people around him who were his advisors, who it was their last shot at power. It was their last chance to be in the room. And they didn't want to give it up either. And a bunch of people made incredibly selfish choices. And the entire, like, the American experiment hinged on it. And, like, we got to deal with the Joe Biden's ego, like, what's his name's ego? The guy's
Mike Donilon.
Hunter, the guy whose judgment is historically awful, right? what got to say in this? Like, I don't know. Like, I think about how we make decisions at the Bulwark, just at institutional levels, and for the things that are the tiniest level, you know, they're important for us at the Bulwark, but have nothing to do with, like, the fate of liberal democracy. It's like, well, we get a bunch of people with opposing views in the room. We sit around and hash them out. Like, we don't just say, well, it's really, you know, Sarah Tim's decision.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to hurt Tim's feelings.
I got a final thing that I want to say that's, again, that's not actually about this. JVL, you totally skipped over the jobs numbers and the revision. Like, we hit it, we said it, but, like, we didn't dig in on it. And I had one thing I wanted to say on that.
Go ahead.
Remember how I kept telling you that people were deeply, they were not feeling a positive economy? And everybody was like, the economy's good, the economy's good. Even under Joe Biden, like, Donald Trump is doing his own job to kill it. But, like, those revisions, I think, demonstrate that we were not dealing with nearly as strong an economy as people thought. And therefore, I think that the people who were feeling like they were living in a crappy economy were a better indicator than the top level expert numbers that we were getting or the way that economists were talking about it, because they were totally overinterpreting, or they did not have good jobs data. Like, the number revisions down means that the economy was in a much worse place than people were acting like it was going into that election.
Agree to disagree.
That's it. Agree to disagree. Come on.
This is an excellent show, but an incredibly long show. And it's like to say, like, the unemployment numbers were soft at the very, very softer than we realized at the very, very end is almost nothing to do with the insane perceptions that people had where they believed it was 2008.
Okay.
For like 3.5 years.
We're going to go deep on this on Secret on Friday.
No, we're not.
You're right. And if you don't, it's because you're going to be doing something even better. And that's why people need to sign up for the Bulwark Plus so they can get the Secret Podcast.
Yeah. Sarah, you have a special message for people before we get out of here.
I do. If you'd like to see us all fight like this live, you can bicker. Do it. Because we, bicker. We don't fight. Friends don't fight. Love means never having to say you're sorry. But the Bulwark's upcoming live shows are happening. You all know one of my favorite parts of this thing is that we have built a real community here. And when you come to these shows, you get to see what that community is like. And it is our favorite thing to do. So we have a live show in Toronto later this month. It sold out immediately. We are sorry to our Canadian friends. We are working on a way to see more of you. We took a much too small of a venue. We didn't realize how intense the
Canadians love us too much
in Canada.
The Canadians love us too much. And JVL's not there, which might help. I don't know. Who knows?
But we are also going to be in America. So you can join. Oh yeah, JVL's not coming to the Canada show.
Yeah, that's right.
He's scared of the Mounties. He's scared of the Mounties. He's like, the Mounties are going to detain me.
I'm not crossing any borders.
Okay. Well, luckily for JVL, we've got some America shows. Tim, JVL, and I will be in DC on October 8th, and then on October 11th in New York City. Put them on your calendars.
My home.
Buy tickets. Yes. As JVL has been saying, one of the best ways we can combat the darkness is to experience it together. And I hope you'll come join us. And if you really want to get all the time with us, you can. VIP tickets are included in the sale that will give you an early entry to the show to sit in the audience for an intimate Q&A with Tim, JVL, and myself, where you can flip the script and ask us your questions. What?
How intimate are we going to get?
Just, I think we can be close. We're going to let people touch JVL. We're going to let them lay hands on JVL.
You're going to use me as a human shield. That's great. You know what? That's fine, because I'm going to be Xanaxed up. I'm going to be loving it. I'm going to be loving contact with everybody.
Yeah, you do love your Xanax before a show. Okay, guys, check out thebulwark.com/events for more and to figure out where you get tickets. That is thebulwark.com/events. Come hang.
Good show. Long show. Everybody, we will catch you next week. Bye.